This is News in No Time, Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, more on President Bush's appointment to the High Court and a gay teenager faces conversion camp. In our New York Bureau, we're joined by E.R. Shipp, a columnist at the New York Daily News, along with Robert George, who's an editorial writer at the New York Post. Also with us from our Chicago Bureau, Roland Martin. He has a new title today, and it says here he's a commentator for TV One Cable News Network, or the news, I guess, on that network. All right, that being said, let's get right into what we were talking about with Juan and Ron Walters just a moment ago, and that's what many people are talking about today, and that's the president's choice for the Supreme Court. Roland, I'm curious, as you take a look at this, let me get one of the things out of the way that many people are speculating, and that is that the president and the White House decided to make the announcement now to take some of the heat off of the Roe controversy that they've seen over the course of the last couple of weeks. Do you buy that at all?
Absolutely. Of course, Tim Russert said last night that every Republican, he said, thank God this conversation has changed away from Roe and now to the Supreme Court nominee, which will certainly drive the dialogue over the next several weeks.
Mm-hmm. Robert George, I'm wondering your thought on so many people talking about what should and shouldn't be thought about and factored into when you make an appointment to this court. But it's almost foolish to think that a president is not going to find someone that they find is aligned with their ideology, isn't it?
Oh, of course. I mean, I think clear right on the face of it. What has always been interesting is, and this has always been the fear that of conservatives, is that Republicans, from the perspective of those on the right, Republican presidents tend to quote screw up unquote their pick more than Democrats do. We've had the history from Eisenhower picking Earl Warren all the way from to Jerry Ford picking Paul Stevens to Bush the first picking David Souter. So it was very clear that the conservative coalition supporting this administration, you know, really wanted to make sure that they had real complete input, so they're not unpleasantly surprised.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, I would consider those scripts. I call that divine intervention by God.
Yeah. Let me ask you, E.R., as you look at this, John Paul Stevens and others really are looking at it, said, at possibly stepping down. This court is not a young court by any means. When you look at this nomination yesterday and you look at the landscape that may be coming if one is to be believe the ideology bent that this president has and would certainly find to make these appointments. How concerned are you that liberals are correct that we will see, as we discussed with Ron and Juan, an erosion of, for instance, civil rights laws and the like?
Well, that is the great fear of a number of people. Even Judge Roberts has apparently been on the record, even though his record is kind of enigmatic. He's been on the record seeming to be against Roe versus Wade. He's very much a devout Catholic. He seems to have some concerns about flag burning as a means of protest and issues such as that. So I think if more of the replacement judges on the Supreme Court are of those views, there is something to worry about. But I think some of these judges are going to be, as Thurgood Marshall was, just ornery and stick on around as long as they can until perhaps a Democrat is elected.
I think what's interesting is, though, even though you can never really ideology can only allow you to predict a certain amount of a judge's decision. For example, I mean, Judge Scalia was the swing vote in 1989 on flag burning. He said flag burning is protected speech, and he of course is one of the most conservative members of the court. So you can never completely predict how they're going to come down on individual issues.
Oh, for sure. But if you know their judicial philosophy, you can almost predict which way they're going to go.
But in the medical marijuana case, for example, Thomas and Scalia came down on opposite ends of it, and they have the same philosophy.
ER, and I think that's part of the problem here, in that everyone is talking about how talented Roberts is, but in many ways, he's somewhat of a mediocre judge. And here's what I mean by that. We are now choosing folks who don't have experience, who don't have deep records. He served 2 years on the appeals court. That's it,
but,
just two
but
years.
But he's a Washington... He's a Washington insider, so those who are in power feel comfortable
as
with
did,
him.
As did Clarence, Clarence Thomas.
Also, Robert, we should also suggest here, there were years where we were hearing from many in Washington that they didn't want people who had these long-standing records as judges, that they did not necessarily know the real world if they didn't have those kinds of experiences,
you know,
per se.
It is distressing, frankly, I think, on regardless of the ideological question, it's distressing, frankly, that some of the people who should be considered some of the strongest minds in the land in terms of legal thought, people like, say, Lawrence Tribe on the left, for example, and we mentioned Bork, or Edith Jones, for example, on the Fifth Circuit. These are people who are so smart and have such a paper trail that it would become almost impossible for them to be confirmed, because either the far right would block a Tribe, or the left would say an Edith Jones is a non-starter.
Roland, I asked this question when we found out that Sandra Day O'Connor was going to step down, and let me pose it to you today. It seems as though these have always been political nominations and appointments, obviously, to the lower courts. But it seems the game and the stakes are far higher, and now we see more, quote, outsiders involving themselves in this process. How detrimental do you believe that to be, if at all?
Well, I don't believe it to be detrimental at all, in that the Supreme Court is the final arbiter of our laws. And so, therefore, for us to not take an active role who is going to be on that court, this is a democratic process. We have the right to do so, and I think we should be as active as we can. Not necessarily—I don't believe in trashing someone, but I do believe in looking at their record, being highly critical, and evaluating them to see if they are fit to serve a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court.
It's interesting here, pick up your point, but it's interesting here when Roland says for us to be involved. But the reality is us becomes bloggers and special interest groups who are now pouring millions of dollars into trying to sway one way or the other the decision.
Sure. But what they're doing is, as Roland said, it's part of our democratic duty. But to some extent, I think what many people are discovering is what we were trying to say, we who write commentaries were trying to say in 2004, that to the victor goes the spoils, that the Supreme Court was the grand prize. So go out and vote. And a lot of people never took that to heart, didn't quite understand the connection of the Supreme Court to their lives.
That's
and
right.
Now we're seeing what's going on.
And Robert, the interesting point, perhaps the ironic point here, when you talk about to the victor goes the spoils, when we think back to the most contentious election perhaps in our history and the whole federal recount, this judge, in fact, had a role in that, in arguing for the White House, part and parcel of that decision.
That's right. He was part of Ken Starr's team, and one could make the point that John Roberts, excellent, smart legal mind, helped get George Bush in office, and now George Bush
is repaying the favor.
Yeah,
perhaps he was
a better prognosticator than any of us thought. Huh? All right, let's move our attention quickly to an interesting point here. Maryland's governor, Lieutenant Governor rather, Mike Steele, who is rumored to perhaps be looking at a possible run for the U.S. Senate seat versus Kwesi Mfume in Maryland in 2006, which would become a very interesting race if indeed it comes to fruition. But he's been taking some heat recently because of a situation that happened with Maryland's governor, who decided to hold a fundraiser at a country club that has no black members. When initially asked about this, Mike Steele suggested that he felt that all of the hubbub about this was, in his words, quote, all a bunch of nothing, end quote. And now he seems to have been pressured to backpedal on that statement a bit. What's your thought here when looking at this? And I always find it interesting that when white America or black America does something, black folk have to either apologize or speak for someone else or deal with it. Here we go, Mike Steele. So what's your thought?
It's the governor's problem, really. So the governor should be taking the heat for having a fundraiser at a place that excludes minorities. I think it's not just blacks. And I'm not even sure women are members there in their own right. This has come up with Augusta National for the Masters Tournament, and Tiger Woods was the one who was being told he should boycott the golf tournament rather than all those corporate entities who were members there. I think the governor should take the heat, but Mr. Steele was probably too dismissive of the importance of this issue to the state of Maryland and to people in general who care about inclusion.
There's something that's very critical here, folks. I mean, although this is 2005 and we're highly, you know, we complain about, we say, well, some things really don't matter. This is a golf club that refuses to admit us. And of course, they will say, well, no, we don't refuse to. We simply don't have any. Former Dallas Mayor Ron Kirk caused a huge firestorm in the city when he highlighted this issue. HBO Real Sports highlighted this issue as well. And so the governor should be taking the task. And of course, he has blown it off by saying, quote, I don't know what their membership list is. And guess what? It's none of my business, nor is it any of your business. But it is our business, Governor Ehrlich. If you, as the top person in the state, will have a fundraiser here, you clearly show that you really don't care about these issues, and take the opportunity to tell those white men who are giving you dollars, you need to be inclusive, because these are the kinds of folks who hire and fire. Yeah. These are the kind of folks who give money to
other candidates. Robert George, let me play devil's advocate, and let me also play the role of many of the heads of these clubs that will simply say to you, our friend Hootie and Augusta, first and foremost, who will suggest that these are private clubs. We have the ability and desire and want to admit anyone we choose. And because they're private, you shouldn't be up in arms if we choose to regulate who we allow in.
That is true on the face of it. But let me be clear here. I lived in Maryland for 18 years. I know Michael Steele. One of my best friends is a longtime Republican fundraiser. A private function is all well and good. The governor of a state should not be holding a fundraiser in an exclusive private club. Clear and simple. And on top of that, frankly, a Republican, you know, they may not particularly like it, but the bar is higher, is even higher for them, given the fact that the Republican Party is now at a point where it is trying to reach out more to minorities. It is attracting really good, solid candidates like Michael Steele. And Michael Steele, frankly, I mean, he was in an awkward position because, you know, he's the lieutenant governor and he has to, in a sense, sort of be a team player. So I think that's why he wanted to defend it. But the thing is, what Ehrlich did was absolutely ridiculous. And in fact, the Republican fundraiser I spoke to said that the ripple effect is now going through the business community, because now members of the club suddenly find themselves in embarrassed positions.
So they, I mean, should be embarrassed.
You're absolutely right.
And they should be.
And I think, frankly, I mean, fortunately, this is very early in the whole campaign, and it's going to blow over by next year. But I think Ehrlich will actually, there'll be greater problems next year in his reelection.
Roland, Robert raises an interesting point here, and that is, and we've had Ken Melman on and others who are involved in this RNC effort, this new outreach to Black America. Yet it does not necessarily mean that Republicans are in favor of this, and I am dividing, obviously, the Republican National Committee versus the body Republican. I'm wondering how you see that.
Well, I would like to see Ken Melman and those Republicans take Governor Ehrlich to task, not Michael Steele, but take Ehrlich to task for holding such a fundraiser. This is one of those times when they call on, you know, Democrats to be highly critical of others. I always love to see Republicans who call on so-called black leaders to criticize a Louis Farrakhan. Well, let's see them criticize their own and say, Governor Ehrlich, you should apologize. And in fact, why don't you return the money that you raised at this private club to show us exactly how you feel about it versus being dismissive. Let's see them do that.
No, I think that's good. And keep in mind here, Maryland is still a very Democratic state. Ehrlich won 3 years ago because the Democrats had had an absolutely ridiculous candidate, Kathleen Townsend. Next year, they've got the governor of Baltimore, Michael, whose last name is blank.
Michael Malley.
Thank you, Michael Malley. Thank you. It's a very strong candidate. And frankly, the black vote will be something of a swing vote there. So Ehrlich has got some obstacles he has to face, and Steele obviously will be appealing to a lot of African Americans to cross over and support him. And so I think the stakes are high on this very small issue.
Let me take us to something that is of a sidebar, and if indeed we see Michael Steele jump into the race for the Senate seat that Kwesi Mfume has already suggested he's going to vie for, what does this say, if anything, that we can now look at the idea of two African Americans in fact vying for that seat, and what will we take out of that race?
Well, if we're fortunate, we will see that there are many opinions across the political spectrum among people of color, and especially among blacks. These are sometimes points that are lost when the presumption is that all blacks are Democrats, that all blacks support the same issues in the same manner. So this could be, at a minimum, a nice civic lesson for black people, but for others too.
All right. You know what, Ed? One thing that's quite interesting is that Mfume was highly critical of Democrats, suggesting that they put a candidate up against him because they did not feel as if he could win. And he made those comments before the National Association Minority Media Executives in Chicago, and I was moderating the Q&A, and he was highly critical of them. And it's interesting that the Republicans are clearing the field for Steele, where in Maryland there's never been a black elected statewide to any position, and they are not coalescing around
the thing. The dynamics are very different, though. There are not a lot of strong Republicans in Maryland to run in the first place, whereas there are a number of strong Democrats, and I think that's why you've got a little problems there.
All right, that's the coming. Our ship, Roland Martin, Robert George, thank you very much. Greatly appreciated.
Thanks, Ed.
Coming up, film director Tim Story on his superpowered journey from the barbershop to the Fantastic Four. And we'll hear from the author of the sexy new novel, Bliss.